Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Track Podcast presented by Wonderful Pistachios. It is Wednesday, March 20th. I'm Olivia Akpene, joined with Ashley Titians, Corey Moll, a.k.a. Chat Guy.
Chat Guy. We need a Chat Guy shirt.
I really need to invest in that, I promise.
Right now, I'm all about Save Track.
Love that.
Like that, Save Track.
As you can see, Ashley and I are really chilling today.
We're chilling.
I am so pumped. Wonderful Pistachios, I love y'all for getting me my honey roasted pistachios. These are my favorite.
I know
you've already gone through a bag of salt and vinegar.
I do love the salt and vinegar ones. Those are by far the best. If you know me, I love salt and vinegar chips. Tastes like I'm eating some salt and vinegar potato chips. I love it.
They're so good. But overall, how's everyone doing? Ashley, I feel like I haven't seen you in like a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah, basically. We've been traveling all over the place. I know I was at the 10. You guys were at Adidas Track Nationals. Lots of good track happening, both outdoors and indoors.
Yeah. Corey, how you doing? Track guy.
Great. I mean, our March was the most busy it's ever been.
That is very true. Very true. So for this week's episode, we're going to dive into our top moments from the 10. As I mentioned, well, Ashley mentioned, she was on the ground. Tobogo. In the 400 meters, we're going to dive into that as well. We're going to talk some hypotheticals and end the show with some backpack talk. So to kick things off, let's talk about our top moments from the 10. Ashley, I just want to hand off the baton to you because I know you were on the ground.
Yes.
Doing amazing things per usual. Can we talk about the pro 1500 field first? And we'll just start from there.
Yeah, you know, obviously the 10, kind of the highlights are those men's and women's Paris 10Ks. But I know we'll get to that in a second. And I know we were mentioning, and we chatted with this athlete last week on the Flow Track podcast, Sadie Engelhart of Endura High School, the junior, the NC State commit. She decided that she was going to go run there at the 10 in the, not the high school 1600, but the pro women's 1500. And I believe we have a race video of her finish there, but Sadie not only ran this race, but she won this race. She won the race in 409.70, just under 4 seconds off of that 406 automatic Olympic trials qualifying, or Olympic, not trials, the Olympic standard, or the, no, I was right, the Olympic trials qualifying mark. Just under 4 seconds off the Olympic trials qualifying mark. And it was interesting because she not only ran this race, but she led for most of this time, right? Like she wasn't out of the lead until the last there. And here we go. We can see this race here play out. Can she
win the 10 as well? So this is Sadie Engelhart now moving on the outside. It's Engelhart.
Incredible performance there from Sadie. Since you were on the ground, were you expecting her to cross that finish line in front?
Honestly, I don't know what I was to expect. I mean, she led for the majority of the race. So when I saw Lauren Gregory go to the lead there with, you know, on that bell lap, I was like, oh gosh, maybe Sadie used all of her energy to stay in the lead and, you know, keep it there. But it was Lauren Gregory in the end who was able to she was able to beat Lauren Gregory there, and that was really impressive to me, especially just a week after running 4:36 at New Balance.
Yeah, and I know, as you mentioned, we had a chance to talk with her before, like last week's episode, and the fact that she was just like, I just want to better my personal best of 4:11. I want to hang tight. I had a chance to talk with her at New Balance National Indoors too, and pretty much told me the same thing of, I'm just going to be in the back, hanging out. And she's a junior in high school, and here you go, winning this race. And the fact that she grabbed the victory in a 4:09.70, crushing her personal best, was absolutely incredible just to witness.
Yes, and I think the other thing too that was impressive, final 400 meters, 63 seconds. 63 seconds. High school junior.
Crazy.
She's got some foot speed.
Foot speed for sure. And so I was just really impressed with Sadie and just how she just went about it fast last 400 meters. And I kind of knew she had it in her, and I think she knew it too. She's like, after my performance from New Balance, I knew I can put something fast down. So it was just a matter of doing it on the day.
Exactly.
All right. So Ashley, let's move to the 10Ks. Let's start with the men.
Goodness, that men's 10K was, that was the last race of the day, the last race of the evening, and man, was it spicy. There was so much happening. Going into this, we knew that the pacing lights were going to be set at that 27 flat mark, which is that Olympic standard for the 10K in the event. This is what these guys were chasing after. And I think the question was, how many guys were going to see get under 27 minutes? And was this an interesting race? We saw eight guys get under that 27 flat standard, led by Grant Fisher, who won this race in 26:52.04. I believe we have a here we go. Cool
shot
here.
Drone view.
I know.
This is great.
I mean, as you can see, like, it was just like, it was a matter of like, can Grant Fisher hold on to all these guys that are chasing after him? And he found another gear and he won this race.
Nico Young on the outside. Nico's going to get
Nico
second.
Was
but it is
pushing.
Grant Fisher, the American record holder, takes it in 26:52.
Wild. Look at the mob of people, too, just on the inside, which is great. And I love this. You were talking about this in the office where, well, we cut it, but like, he was just like, clapping.
He was interacting with like the fans on the yeah. side because everyone was like cheering for him and he gave him high fives. And again, it was really cool. And like I said, Grant Fisher won this race. And as you saw there, but we can't not talk about Nico Young here
yeah.
either. Collegiate all-time best, 26:52.72, just 1 week after that 3K, 5K double win at NCAA Indoors. I mean, like, what a beast. Like, that's, you know, you run that 3K, 5K double. That's not an easy double. You win both. You then go, you travel back, and then you travel back to Flagstaff, and then you're traveling again to the 10 in California, and you not only hit that 10K standard, but you break the collegiate all-time best. Like,
yeah.
That's just impressive to me.
Yeah, I was quite impressed. I'm not surprised by it, to be honest. Like, just seeing Nico being able to do that double at NCAAs put in perspective for me that this guy's ready to go. Like, he is on top of it. He is strong. He is fit. The mindset is right. It was just a matter of time before Nico just put everything together. 26:52 for a collegiate all-time best is remarkable.
I think it's just interesting, too, to think about this, right? So the way the race played out, at one point, these guys were kind of slipping off of those pacing lights. And I believe it was Mo Ahmed that went to the front trying to get everyone back on that, on those lights, right? He's like, we got to stick with them. And, you know, because that was the goal, again, to hit that Olympic standard. And again, you had eight guys there at the end. I mean, they were sprinting there at the end trying to get that standard and get, not only that, but get that win as well. And again, that was incredible to see. I think there's plenty of other interesting storylines, I think, too, when you go down the list of the guys that were there. I know Adrian Wildschut, he lowered his South African national record from 27:23 to now under 27 minutes. That was another thing that stood out for me, too.
Mm-hmm. Did you mention that Graham Fisher led seven others to the Olympic standard?
Yes,
okay,
eight
cool.
standard. Yep,
awesome.
Eight guys under the standard.
Great work, men.
Corey?
Jack Guy?
Any thoughts?
One of the fastest 10Ks ever built. You know, on U.S. soil. I mean, can you comment a little bit on the 10 as a whole? I think part of the allure here is what this meet has become for people seeking these Olympic standard times. I think this is what this meet has become over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think when they started it, and then over the years, you've seen big performances come out of there. It's set this reputation that, like, this is a chance for you to get in an early season meet when you're pretty fit. You get a lot of people in just at one meet and you're going after something big. Like, there's no tactics involved of like, oh, like, we want to sit back and just see, you know, sprint to the finish, like, who's going to win. Like, this is where we're like, we are going to hit the time standards. That way, later on in the season, when it's more focused on the actual racing part rather than, like, hitting those time standards, I think that's what kind of makes it special, you know? And you can tell that, like, when you were there, like, the crowd is into it, right? Like, you're in, like, kind of a small, more intimate setting at J. Sarah Catholic High School. You have the mountains in the background, great Cali vibes, and just everyone's really excited because they know they're about to witness something really spectacular and pretty historic. And you don't always get that, especially, you know, for a 10K distance. A lot of times at that 10K distance, it is more tactical. Like, you're not going all out in a 10K in every 10K that you do if you're a distance runner.
And if you're watching it on television, usually you don't see the whole race.
True.
You see it cut through commercials. So there was, yeah. I mean, the way it was streamed is you saw this thing full force, all of it.
And I don't know. I know you could see it in that video we showed up there. I mean, we had a drone. I thought that was pretty epic. Like, having a drone follow the race too. That was pretty sick view.
Yeah. Just kind of piggyback on everything that we're mentioning. I think it's the culture of the 10, right? Yeah. Just, we're not coming here to, you know, just chill and run a 10K. Like, no, if you're running at the 10, we're putting something fast together. We got the lights. We got the drone. We're bringing the energy. The fans are coming in. Cali vibes, as you mentioned. We're going all in for it. So yeah. I think that also helps the athletes get excited and not worry about it being too tactical, quote unquote, there. But just going out and running something fast is kind of what they're looking for.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the women's 10K as well.
And now this one was an interesting one. I think it played out a little differently than maybe some people were expecting, but gosh, Shisige Gebrselama, number 9 all time in the women's 10K here. I mean, that's insane. Like, it was one of those where the pacing light going in was set at 29:40. This was kind of set by Alicia Monson, who said that she was going after that American 10K record and going under 30 minutes. It ended up being Gebrselama, who was able to put down an incredible performance, and largely that half back of the race, it was solo. And that's hard to do, especially in a 10K when you still have, you know, you're 3 miles in about and you still have 3 more miles to go. But I mean, the crowd was there cheering for her, and that was really just really impressive to see. And then I have to give kudos to Wayne Colati in second.
Yes.
It was really interesting seeing her race that, because she didn't go out super fast with, like, Munson and Gebrselama, like, at the front. Like, she was very patient, and she worked her way up. And by the end, I mean, she ran a huge, I believe, 30-33 I think that's a personal best, just 2 weeks before she goes to compete at World Cross Country Championship.
Which is wild.
Yes. So I think that was also a really impressive performance. Also, I want to give shout-out to Lauren Gregory. She set an Australian record and also hit the 30-40 Olympic standard. That was a big thing here, is that 30-40.
Yeah. Lauren Ryan.
Yeah, sorry, not Lauren Gregory. Lauren Ryan. There were a lot of Laurens at the Lauren Ryan, correct. So I thought that was interesting. I mean, it is one thing we do have to point out. Alicia Munson unfortunately had to drop out of this race after saying she was going to go after lowering her own American record in this race. But overall, just there's so many storylines to pick at, right? And I could go on and on, but I'll throw it to you before I pick at more of my storylines.
I think for me the biggest, I don't want to say shocker, but just seeing Wayne Colati just get out there and compete before going to World Cross Country Championships, I think is huge. Setting, you know, a really fast mark here of 30-33 right before she's about to, you know, represent the U.S. at the Cross Country Championships. And number 9 all time. That's not often that you get to see that right before your eyes, too. So.
No. And I want to talk a little bit about Wayne Colati, actually. I had a chance to speak with her afterward. And yeah. Because I asked her, I was like, why are you running this, like, 10K randomly? Like, I mean, you got World Cross. We just saw you break, you know, the American record in the half marathon in January. Like, what's the thought process here? And she was like, I just really wanted to get that, you know, get some turnover, like, you know, that speed and stuff. And, you know, that should translate over to cross country. And it was interesting, too, hearing, I asked her, I was like, so going into this, like, what was your plan? Like, you knew the pace lights were going to be set at 29:40. Like, what was your plan? She told me, she was like, the night before, she was like, I had no idea what to do. She was like, I didn't know if I wanted to go out with the leaders or if I wanted to, like, sit back and wait. But then she said that when in the race, when the pace lights started slipping away from them, she was like, no, I can't let this happen. Like, I need to get back up closer to those pacing lights. And she did really well. And again, she finished second there. I thought that was really impressive.
I think that's remarkable, because I just think about a 10K distance, I feel like there's a lot of thoughts that's going through your mind. So yeah. It's like, it's one of those instances where you got to catch yourself and kind of execute the plan, essentially, that you went into it. Because as you mentioned, as the lights are slipping away, a typical person would be like, okay, the lights are slipping away. I'm just going to hang back because this is comfortable. But, you know, Wayne went in there with somewhat of a plan of like just getting some turnover speed before she goes to cross. So let me get as close as I can to these pacing lights because that's what we're here for.
For sure. So. And I mean, looking at the, you know, the rest of this field in all, four athletes broke that. They went under that 30-40 Olympic standard. Some other interesting notes, I think, as well. Krisha Schweitzer, she finishes sixth there in her first race since having surgery. So I thought that was really impressive. And then Kira D'Amato, she's someone that we've seen on the roads for so long. She unfortunately didn't make that U.S. Olympic marathon team. So she's shifting her goals now. And she's like, hey, let's go after this 10K, maybe qualify for the trials there and compete there in Eugene. And she runs a 45-second PR, 31:05. And, you know, so I got to speak with her afterwards as well. And she was like, you know, it's hard to go from being committed to one aspect of running and then have to completely switch priorities, especially in Olympic gear. But I mean, that's something that's on her mind. And hey, that's a big PR for a good way to start.
Yeah.
One thing that Grant Frischer brought up to Ryan Fenton when they were talking after the race was that this idea of opportunities in front of you. Grant Frischer said that you don't have very many opportunities to run a 10K of this stature. And if you don't get the standard or you don't meet your goal, then what's next? I think that's interesting because a lot of athletes had this ambition in mind. Some of them got it, some of them didn't. So what's the move from this point forward as you try to search for that?
I don't know. I don't know. Wait, what is the move?
Yeah, what is it?
I mean, I think there's not many opportunities to run a 10K, right? Yeah, so like
that's a pivot.
Right. But you have to find the right event, you know, the right atmosphere, the right, you know, region to go after it. I think coaches that saw their athletes competing and didn't get it, now they have to switch their strategy a little bit and see what's next on my to-do list.
Just got to pivot.
I
know that's easier said than...
It looks like we do have something in the chat, Corey. So some thoughts on the 10 here, it looks like.
Yeah, MJ Buchel just commented, Adrian Wildschut is going to put Hoka on the map. Do we think he's going to put Hoka on the map?
I think so. I mean, this guy, he's also, I talked to so many people after this race, and it's just interesting hearing everyone's different perspectives. I talked to him afterwards as well, and again, so he went into this race with a 27:23 personal best, and he goes 26:56, I believe. Like, that's just, he lowers his own record by almost 30 seconds, his own South African record by 30 seconds. And you could just tell that, like, this means so much to him, and his eyes are focused not just in the present, but on the journey and, like, what's ahead. Like, he keeps saying, like, yeah, like, it's great to perform here and run really fast now, but I also want to perform really well on that Olympic stage. I know he mentioned, too, he's really just running for his family, too. I know he has a brother. He mentioned he's been running for his late father, too, and he said he knew he'd be proud of what he did, and it was just really interesting. I think, yeah, he can put Hoka on the map for sure.
Boom. Answer's yes.
Answer's yes.
Chat guy, anything else?
I think
get into some speed.
I think that's it.
Okay. I feel like I can talk about Tobogo all day.
All day.
Okay. I saw this on social media.
Mm-hmm.
44:29. Tobogo is on a mission.
Yes.
He really, truly is. I said this yesterday with you, Ashley, in the office. I was a huge fan of Tobogo going into this Olympic year, and I'm just a bigger fan now. I'm just a bigger fan.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts when you saw the 44:29?
Yeah, for context, in South Africa on Monday night, it was, I believe, we saw Letsile Tobogo. He represents Botswana. Young sprint talent. We saw what he did at World. He medaled in both the 100 and the 200 at World Outdoor Championships last August. And, you know, he's one where it's like 400 for Tobogo. Like, we saw him run the 100 and the 2 at Worlds. He runs a 44:29 open 400. And if you've seen the video on social media, if you haven't, you need to go watch it because this man is jogging. He is jogging and he pulled up like 20 meters from the finish and was like practically walking 44:29 like that. It's just, to me, that's just incredible, right? Because again, he jogged it basically, and it's an interesting scenario, right? So earlier to open up his outdoor season, basically, he ran a world, technically a world best because it's not a official recognized distance by World Athletics for a world record, but the fastest ever at 300 meters. It was sub 31.
Yeah.
And now you have him here jogging again at 44:29. It's interesting to me, right? Because again, we saw him in that 1 and 2 in Budapest, but now you see him racing that over distance, you know, like he's moving up, not moving down. You see Noah Lyles, on the other hand, taking a different approach in the indoors. He's running 60, so he's going down. It's just interesting to me. I'm like, gosh, like, what if you had Tobogo in the 400 at the Olympics? Like, that would be insane.
Let's talk about that, because okay. I truly feel like the 400 meters itself, it's wide open. Like, I'm not going into this Olympic year and I'm like, the heavy favorite is XYZ. Like, there's athletes that come into mind, Michael Norman, Karani James. So now my brain is like, wait, Tobogo, I feel like, needs to be in this conversation. As you mentioned, second in the 100 at Worlds, third in the 200. And now I'm like, are we going to see Tobogo do a 200-400 double?
I just don't see that very often, hardly ever.
Where his mindset is at. Or is he running this 400 to just gain strength for this 200?
If he's trying to gain strength for this 200, then...
You're running 44:29.
Yeah, like I've said this before on previous podcasts, but now I feel even more confident in my prediction. Tobogo will beat Noah Lyles. He will beat Noah Lyles.
I need the chat to respond to this.
100, 200, Tobogo's...
Any event?
Any event.
Any... Tobogo beats Noah Lyles in any event.
That's my prediction.
100, 200, or 400.
I feel more confident in the 200 pick than the 100 pick. But also, you have to see, too, that, like, I mean, he finished second to him in the 100. He was only, like, a few hundreds off of what he ran in the 100.
Who do you think catches the most strays in the track world? Is it Noah?
Maybe.
Everyone?
Maybe. Who else would it be?
I feel like it's Noah. He's catching strays everywhere.
No disrespect. I'm just saying, I think Tobogo is underrated, because I think we've created, I don't know if we is the right word, but there's been this narrative created where a lot of this focus is on Noah Lyles, because he has been one to, you know, and you could argue USATF and World Athletics, you're creating a narrative because you're trying to create fans. Like, that's true. Like, that's kind of, I think, the thought process there, like wanting to watch track and field. So, hey, let's put the spotlight on one person. But I think in that case, you lose people like Tobogo. You lose people like Arian Knighton. Like, these are two of the young guys that I think could be the future of the sport. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he beats him.
I'm still stuck on the fact that you said any event.
Putting it out there. And no disrespect to anyone. I'm just saying, I think he can beat him.
Well, again, I also think, like, Noah Lyles is getting all of the attention because I honestly feel like rightfully so.
He won
gold in the 100 and the 2, mm-hmm. won the 4x1. But I agree with you. I think Tobogo is an underpicked, underrated athlete. And here he drops a 44:29. I kind of want Tobogo to do this 200-400 double. I really think he can win gold.
What's the schedule like?
I haven't even looked at it. I've not looked at it. But if there's an opportunity for him to do that,
I'm all for it. So maybe we can avoid this whole scenario about Tobogo versus Lyles, and he just runs the 4, and then, like, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
I will say about Tobogo, it's a really good performance, but if you look at his history, obviously there's not a ton of experience in the 400. He finished last year with a PR of 44.75 in July. So he has to run it a little bit more consistently for me to kind of peg him up there with the men you mentioned, like Karani James and Michael Norman. That being said, he's talented, but, you know, you could argue a couple other guys could be a 400 threat. Like, you know, Fred Crowley's not going to run the 400, but he could be a 400 threat, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's just a matter of, like, what is your decision process as you lead into the Olympics?
Yeah, because that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, are we just running this 400 for some strength?
Yeah.
Because right now, I want to see more.
But you make a good point, Corey. Like, he's not the only guy where, like, if you wanted to run the 4, you could. It would just be a matter of getting up there and actually, like, putting down consistent performances through the season to work up to that.
Because it's one thing to put out one really solid performance. It's another thing to have to go through rounds. Yeah. That's where people get a little finicky, because it's like, okay, the first round, like, think about it. The first round, you can kind of cruise through it.
Yeah.
But that second round, it's like, okay, I got to give you a little bit more effort to make sure I'm – in the mix. We've seen too many people, even at the NCAA level, that we're expecting them to be in the final, and they just can't go.
But I do think, like you mentioned, like it, we're in an interesting situation where that men's 400 is an event where I look at it and I'm like, there's no one that, like, there's no Noah Lyles in the men's 400 right now where it's like, I can definitively say, like, you know, put all my money on this person. I think he's going to win. It's much more wide open. Like, I mean, we saw, I believe it was Antonio Watson from Jamaica, a younger talent, win the 400 kind of out of the blue at World Outdoor Championships last year. So again, it's one of those where someone could kind of sneak up to the top and grab, you know, a medal. So if Tobogo wanted to do it and
say yes,
throw it down, then like this may be the year where he could win gold in a 400 if he really, really focused on it, potentially.
Tobogo, listen to me. I say yes. Go for it. I say go for this four. I'm all for the double. I just want him. I think I need to see a Noah Lyles Tobogo matchup at the Olympic Games. I don't care. Well, I do care. I want to see it in this 200 because Ashley thinks Tobogo is going to win this 200. Okay, lineup. Let's just say Noah Lyles, Arian Knighton, Tobogo.
Oh, that's
so at the two.
At the two.
That's so tough. I guess I'd go Tobogo, Lyles, Knighton, but then also Knighton beat Tobogo last year in the 200, so I don't know. But Tobogo looks really good right now. But we also haven't seen, well, Knighton ran once indoors. I think he ran low 20s.
That's right. I do remember that.
Yeah, it was on the Continental Tour, I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Ooh. Chat guy, anything from you?
I think I've heard from Noah that his strongest race is the two.
It is the two.
He does believe in that the most. I do like my guy Arian, though. I stan Arian. But at this point, watching Noah run, I don't question his ability. Right now, you got to knock him. He is, you know.
You got to knock him somehow.
He's the, I don't want to say he's the king, but like, it's that metaphor, right?
Yeah.
He's at the top. That's all these guys are trying to knock him off. He's getting all these strays because he's there in that position. So I find it hard to say that he's not there. I think he is the guy to beat in the 200. So if it came down to it, I would pick Noah.
Okay, 200. See,
I'm just going for the wild card. You know, I like a good wild card underdog story. Yeah. So that's maybe that's why I'm going to Bogo. I mean, maybe it's like, you know, I got March Madness in the brain, you know, underdogs, Tobogo, the underdogs.
Oh, okay. Wait. Another question then.
Yeah.
What seeds, if they were March Madness seeds, seed would Noah be? What seed would Let's Seal be? What seed would Arian be?
It's like 1, 2, 3.
No. 1 to 16. What seeds are they?
Well,
1 through 8, I guess. So it would be a 1, 2, 3 situation.
Yeah. Because who else is touching them right now?
I mean, I would kind of say like Let's Seal is like a 5 seed.
5 seed.
Yeah.
Wait, for who?
For Tobogo.
If we're thinking like, you know, traditional March Madness seems 1 through 16, I would pit him.
Actually, I feel like that's fair because I think going into Worlds last year, people didn't really know a whole lot about him because he's so young. You know, he's like the up and coming talent.
But now we know.
Yeah.
Y'all, we know about Tobogo now. Like he medaled.
Maybe you put 9 at like a 3 seed.
Arian's more of a 3, I think. Yeah. 3 or 4.
Yeah, because he's been around long enough, made enough teams where.
Yep.
That's crazy to say that he's been around long enough, even though he's like, what, 21?
Yep.
20? No, not even 21.
Oh, my gosh.
We got a comment here on YouTube. They said it's going to be Lyles, Tobogo, Knighton, and that's from Bednarik Beloyas.
Okay. Fair. Fair.
I see that.
I'm still going to take the undercard or wild card.
Knighton's coming up, though. I'm not underestimating that kid.
Maybe we just need to wait for more performances and then we'll know from there. Maybe that's how we need to end it. We just need to see more. It's still March.
We still need to see
it's more. Still March. We're not to August yet.
Yeah, we're not there.
No.
We'll have this conversation again in May.
I'm sure we'll have this conversation plenty more times.
Yes.
Plenty more.
All right. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk hypotheticals. If Quincy Wilson, aka King Quincy, as people are now starting to call him, Sadie Englehart. We had another athlete. Who was the other one that we were thinking about?
Well, let's add that in later.
Okay, add that in later. If they competed at the Olympic trials, fill in the blank. This is what we would see. Let's talk about Quincy first. Ashley, if Quincy Wilson was going to run at the Olympic trials, how do you think that would play out?
Well, I think it's important, before I answer that, to even mention why we're bringing this up, right? Yes. we saw, I think we talked about this on the previous podcast. We saw what Quincy Wilson did at New Balance Nationals in the 400. He broke the indoor high school U.S. national record, 45.76, beat LZ Coleman's 45.92. And after that race, he kind of said in, I believe he told you this, Olivia, that now the Olympic trials are something that's kind of on his mind. He kind of made that public. He put it out there. And so now it's like, oh gosh, I got to think about Quincy potentially, you know, looking ahead to something like the Olympics. Again, he's only a high school sophomore. He's 16 years old. And I think it brings up this conversation of now we're having this. It's like, if we saw Quincy Wilson go to the Olympic trials, we're throwing Sadie Engelhardt in there as well, because we've seen what she did at the 10 this past weekend in the 1500. Like, if we see them go there, like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to, like, actually answer your question, like, verbatim, but, like, talking it through, like, I think it's interesting scenarios, right? Like, we've seen plenty of high schoolers do this before there's a precedent. Right. You think to, you know, the obvious ones, like Sydney McLaughlin, like, she made the team when she was in high school. Yep. And, I mean, you still had, like, Rasheen Willis, Juliet Whitaker, Sophia Gorjeron, Kate Murphy, all, you know, some of these athletes that have made the trials and competed there. But, so I think, maybe this is how I answer it. If Quincy Wilson and Sadie Engelhardt were to compete at the Olympic trials, it would not be out of the ordinary at all. Like, you know, and especially, I think it's two different scenarios, right? If you think about Quincy, I think it's not just a matter of, like, whether he could compete there, but, like, how he competes, how he stacks up, honestly, against the rest of the field. That's how I look at it, because to me, the U.S. men's 400 and that relay pool is pretty wide open.
Yes.
So that's what I think of. And then when you look at Sadie, like, I think it's like she has nothing to lose. Like, you go out there, you run your hardest. She's a gamer. We know she's a gamer. She likes to compete because she has fun. She loves track specifically. And again, she's only a junior. So to get that, you know, some of that experience now, it kind of, it's interesting, right? Because then you're racing against the pros and some of the collegians, and it kind of, you know, shifts your priorities a little bit.
Here are my thoughts on, I'm going to stick with Quincy. Just seeing him in person run that 45.76. We talked about this last week. He would have finished fifth at NCAAs. Hypothetically, at the Olympic trials, like I mentioned earlier, he's still developing as a young adult. Mm-hmm. And when I think about trials, you have to be able to endure multiple rounds. When you think about Quincy, it's almost like he's going to have to replicate his personal best every time he steps onto the track where he is right now to be able to make it through the rounds, essentially. And so I think, again, this would be a great learning experience for him. I'm all for the high school kids going to Olympic trials and being involved in that atmosphere, because I think it paints the vision of, wow, this is where I am right now as a high school kid. Imagine 4-8 years down the road, I can be in a completely different period in my life where I could actually do something big. Like, we talked with Bella Whitaker, and I think she explained when I saw her in person at NCAAs, or it might have been when she was on the podcast with us, like, she remembers competing at Worlds last year, like the world trials, having that opportunity. And she was like, I never felt like I was capable of being in this position, but now that it's an Olympic year and she's grown even within a year, she's like, I deserve to be in that space. And so I think it's always great to have that opportunity as a younger athlete, if you're able to make it to the trials, whatever it is, Worlds, Olympics, whatever, to have that experience, to kind of paint that vision, kind of fuel that fire that, hey, the next time that I get here, it might be completely different, if all of that makes sense. So
I think one thing, I think we were doing some research earlier today. So yeah. The 400 standard, I believe, is 45.2. We already have someone in the high school field that's qualified. Our guy, Jonathan Sims of Allen High School. He's just a junior this year. He ran 45.12 at AAU Junior Olympics. I still remember that race like it was yesterday.
Wild.
He's already qualified technically, I think, right? Like,
yeah.
If he wants to go, he could go right now. Quincy technically hasn't qualified yet.
Yeah, very true.
So I think when you talk a little bit about the process of enduring, that is so valid. It's very valid. But if we look at the recent experiences of high schoolers at, you know, these outdoor trials, you know, meets, Mia last year made the finals in the 100.
Yes.
Juliet made the semis in 2021 of the 1500 meters. It's not out of the possibility now that high schoolers can do the work and get there.
Right.
And, you know, Quincy is, as we've seen, a different athlete. I think he's got that mentality to be there, and it takes a special breed to go through those rounds and get to that last level. I think if Quincy is in that position, I think he finds a way to get to the finals. I mean, I think his story is, it almost feels like it's just heading towards that way.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think he has, like what we've seen, I think he can make that relay pool. I really
do. I agree. Yes.
And if he makes that final and, you know, does well there, like does Quincy things like, you know, we've seen him do, like, how can you not give him that spot? Like, you know, like I agree. I think it's like one of those things where it's almost like everything's building up in this way for him.
Yeah.
So it's like, I do think he can, you know, endure and get to that final.
Yes.
Potentially.
So we do have a couple of comments here on YouTube. And Bednar commented again. He said, if Quincy's going to be at the trials, he's going to make the relay team. So he's pro Quincy. And then MJ Buchholz said, if he runs the 400 at an Olympic stage, it's much different than winning 400 at nationals. Mm-hmm. Mindset, confidence, it changes, but it'll be curious to see where it pans out.
Yeah, see. Yeah, that's what I mean by kind of mature. Not saying Quincy's not mature, but like he's still very young in the sport. And so just even having that experience is just to say, hey, as a high school kid, I ran at the Olympic trials. Like, that's huge.
There's a certain kind of pressure that gets placed on an athlete when you do begin to have that conversation. And some of it is he's accepting it because he's saying it. Yeah. He's projecting what he wants to accomplish, which is good.
Yeah.
But also now eyes are on you and every time you race.
Yeah, for
very
sure.
True.
All I'm saying is I know, not to shift, Jonathan Sims, come on. Now that he's actually qualified, that I just hope he runs.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. That'd be exciting. Before we move on to our last topic, can we talk about what we talked about today in the office?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if that's a really valid argument.
You don't think so?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Our thoughts right now. If Quincy Wilson and Noah Lyles faced off in the 400 meters right now, because Noah Lyles competed at World Indoors on that 4x4.
You know who I'm going to take. Do you even need to ask?
Well, what... So, picture the race, though. Is it a trials race, or is it just a random meet?
It's just
so Noah has been beat before by a high schooler. Jalen Slade beat him, I think, in the 100
a
couple years back. So, but that was a random meet in the middle of Florida.
I think Quincy beats him.
Was it Asama Singa?
It might have been Asam.
Actually, it was Asam.
I thought it was Jalen, though, too. It might have been Asam.
Maybe it was Asam.
I think it was Asam last year, and we were like, oh, he beat Noah Lyles.
Yes.
Because he ran like 986? No.
Yeah, it was something
like that. Wind dated? Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So we're just saying that, like, we're not talking about trials. We're talking about, like, we're at a random meet.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just say in Florida.
In Florida.
I don't know. That's where Noah's. Maryland's not the weather.
Okay, so we're in random meet in Florida.
I'm painting the picture. We're in Florida. Quincy, Noah, there's the rest of the field. Boom. Gun goes off.
I'm taking Quincy.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Hey, that guy knows. That man runs like there's nothing stopping him. You know, like, you have to be fearless. That kid is fearless. And, like, I don't think he would back down from someone like Noah Lyles. He's going to run his race. You've seen how he goes out in a 400. He goes out like a man on a mission.
And here's the thing, too, putting it in perspective, I'm just thinking about indoors, Quincy has to worry about the break. Like, you have to get out because you're like, I don't want to be mixed in this, you know, everyone cutting in. He will have his very own lane. So I think Quincy might be able to take down.
Use Letseal as an example.
Okay.
He just ran an outdoor 44, what was it,
29.
44, 29. Noah is the fastest man right now in the 100.
Yeah.
You don't think he can step outdoors. 45.7 indoors on a relay is different than an outright open 400.
Absolutely. Yes.
Noah is breaking 45 seconds in the 400.
What?
Yes. Without a doubt.
Probably.
Without a doubt.
I'm kind of just joking that I think Quincy. I'm just a big Quincy fan.
No, I would still say Quincy.
Realistically, Noah's going to beat him. But like...
He split faster, yes, technically, than Quincy, but he was moving. He did not have blocks. We got to remember that. Quincy did it from zero and had to push himself out of the blocks to then run.
I would need to know what kind of training Noah's doing. Like, is he training for that 400? Like, is he doing some strength? Is he doing some endurance? Like, we know Quincy's doing that, but like, is Noah that kind of? There's a lot of factors I need to know before. I mean, I can joke and say Quincy, and like, I really want to say Quincy, and I did say Quincy.
I'm still so, like, saying Quincy.
Maybe I'm backtracking.
Noah.
I don't think it's even a debate. I think it's Noah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, Noah, Quincy. Ashley.
I'll say Quincy.
Okay. It was just a conversation we had in the office today because I was like,
or just because it's kind of fun.
It was fun. I was like, Quincy, realistic. Noah.
Yeah.
I would love to see that happen.
Yeah.
Don't think it will, but we can dream over here.
We can dream.
We can dream. Okay. Okay. Let's move on to our final topic. There's been a lot of things on social media over the last couple days about the different backpacks. We've had three national high school meets. You had New Balance National Indoors, Nike Internationals, and then last weekend was Adidas Track Nationals. And there's just been a lot of controversy over which backpack, I guess, is the best. So I thought we would put in our two cents about what we felt. I was at New Balance, so I saw the New Balance backpacks in person. I was also at Adidas. I saw that in person. I did not see Nike's backpack. I've seen photos. So here we have the New Balance National Indoor Backpacks. I think it's a very sleek look, all black. You know, got the white straps there, blue wings for New Balance. Fantastic. Now, Nike comes out with... I'll let you describe it because you were there.
It looks like a traditional backpack you would find in any retailer with a screen printed Nike logo on it.
Yeah, fair.
Right?
Fair. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be honest.
That's the Nike one. Like.
That's the Nike one. Do we have an Adidas one or no?
I don't know if I found the Adidas
backpack. Fine. Let me describe the Adidas one for you.
Wait, maybe I did put it in there. We may have an Adidas backpack. TBD.
Gray backpack. Rose gold zippers, and then they had the Adidas Track National logo. I think we have it.
There we go. I think something similar.
I'm gonna be honest with you. This photo does not do it justice. It doesn't. And the kids had like different patches. So like I saw kids that said Adidas Track National jumps, and then I saw one that said All American. So they were able to add patches onto their backpack. I was like, this is pretty cool. So
I think it's just crazy to me that like. People are obsessed with high school national championship backpacks.
It's
like,
a thing.
Come on. It's weird.
It's a real thing.
It's kind of weird. But, okay, if I had to personally to give my two cents, I don't really like any of them. I think they're all, none of them really stand out to me. I've seen better New Balance bags, I think, in the past. But I'll still go New Balance. Like, I think they started it. Yeah, I feel like, you know, like if you look back, like when I think back to my days in high school so long ago.
Oh, gosh.
Like, really? Oh, we have the zoom in on the Adidas here. Wait. Do you see the rose gold zippers?
I don't know if that's the right one, but the
it's close.
Close enough.
It's
close enough.
It gives the same vibe for sure. Corey, you were like, did you get a backpack? Because you saw my backpack.
Well, you.
Because my backpack's great too.
You bought a backpack from Amazon that looked identical to the Adidas Track Nationals backpack.
Except, imagine my backpack, but with rose gold zippers.
I have a rose gold. I have a thought here. I think the only real meat that puts. Actual care into it is New Balance.
Yeah,
because that's their thing.
Yeah, that backpack has real utility to it.
Yeah,
they have compartments. It's well made. on it, you saw on whatever website, you know, that they were going for high prices. People were trying to sell them for like $800.
$800. Yes. I saw eBay $800.
People want the backpacks.
I can't even believe paying $800 for a backpack.
No,
but like there's there are some. You could go out in the wilderness, hike. Put your stuff in that. Wait, like, you can't do that with Adidas. You can't do that with Nike.
True.
Unless a pro athlete wore the backpack, put stuff in the backpack, utilized it, then was like, hey, my backpack's for sale. That would be the only reason why I would think about investing $800.
The thing is, like, I saw $800, but then I saw that was like an outlier. But then there were plenty that were like $500, $400.
Oh, no. Like, oh no!
My goodness,
my entry fee into the meet. No,
I'm like, I'm not gonna buy a backpack too if I didn't run there.
But let's just say, like Sydney wore the backpack.
No, I'm not
saying New Balance. No. Well, yeah, Sydney.
No,
Sydney wore the backpack.
But it does show that, like, I think the New Balance bags are valuable. And again, that speaks back to when I think when I was in high school, like, that was all people would talk about. I was like, oh my God, I got to go to New Balance so I can get the backpack. Even like the Emerging Elite backpack, if you didn't make it to like the national level.
And I think these other backpacks at Nike and Adidas still have their place. I think part of it is just, you know, going back to where you're from, showing people that you are part of this thing, and it's like a token of your presence there.
Maybe every meet needs to do something like unique. Like New Balance has the bags. Maybe Nike needs to like figure out whatever their unique thing is. Same with Adidas.
Mm.
Then that maybe that's how you differentiate yourself. Maybe you shouldn't be competing with New Balance, but like find something different.
A Nike belt.
Nike belt? Ooh, like a
Nike belt.
Big belt.
What about a belt?
Actually,
what about a belt?
With like the belt buckle, like the swoosh.
Yeah, like maybe like a Nike swoosh as a belt buckle.
Ooh, that
you would take the Nike belt.
Or watch. Nike actually did give watches.
Oh, true. I think it was that's kind of cool. Winner.
Oh, no, actually, no. It was a necklace. Okay. Penn Relays does watches, but Nike did give away these to winners necklaces.
I would wear a belt, like a Nike swoosh belt.
Too bad you're not competing at high school nationals.
I know, but I'm just saying, I would totally wear that.
Interesting.
The kids want their backpacks or shirts. They will do anything for a shirt.
They'll do anything for a shirt. They'll do anything for the merch. People like free merch. There we go. Here they all are up at the top, compared side by side. Yeah, I got to give it to New Balance. New Balance takes my vote.
I might be crazy for thinking this, but the Adidas, it's the Adidas backpack.
So we got one New Balance, it's the one
rose
Adidas.
Gold. It was like so unique. And Corey, I'm a rose gold fan.
What's your vote?
New Balance.
New Balance. All Balance. Right.
Okay.
Balance. Zero votes for Nike.
Sorry.
There's always next year. There's always outdoor.
Okay. Last notes before we end our show. Matt Senchewicz commented over the weekend that he is retiring. How do we feel about this? My heart honestly sinks a little bit just because I just remember watching Matt. I think he's during my generation of running. Like at the, like we ran around the same time. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It's like, dang, you had such an amazing career and everything good comes to an end.
2024 will be his last season. Yes. So this season, and then he was retiring after this season.
Correct. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I guess we might as well end it on a retirement farewell. Like, he still has the whole season left. But, yeah, I mean, I know Ryan Fenton, who's with us at the 10, he talked to Senchewicz. Senchewicz ran 3:38 in the 1500 at the 10. And basically said, like, yeah, like, this is it for me. I've accepted it. Like, you know, he's trying to soak in every moment. And I thought it was he had a really vulnerable moment, I feel like, because he was just, you know, saying, like, you know, it's hard to know that you can run, like, I think he said, like, you know, 144 and an 800. But then, you know, over the past couple of years dealing with injury and such, and, you know, you run 156 or something. I mean, shoot, he's an Olympic medalist. Come on. Like, he won that 1500. Like, he's had some amazing moments and, you know, he's had plenty of highs and lows. And, you know, it's always, I think as an athlete, like recognizing when it's, you know, personally, you're ready to step away. Like that's a big moment. And, you know, to me, it seems like, you know, this is his moment and he's going to make the most of it. And he's, you know, he's still trying to shoot for that Olympic team. Like he said, you know, I'm still betting on myself to make that Olympic team.
So, you know, when we look at football players who retire, a lot of times the best ones, they're kind of, you know, kind of targeted to, you know, enter into that broadcast booth like Tom Brady and others. What does Matthew Senchewicz do after this year? Does he become a commentator? Can you see him? Because he has been pretty outspoken through his career. Or does he go into coaching like his father? Mm. I mean, what's most likely, do you think, from Senchewicz after his career ends?
I can see him doing both. I feel like whatever his heart gravitates towards, he's just going to excel, whether it's giving back other individuals, coaching them through it, or just using his knowledge, his color, his experience. Like, think about what we're doing, right? Like, we're all former athletes, have been in the sport. I like to view this as like my way of kind of giving back because I love the sport so much and I love talking. So combine the two, and boom, here we are today.
I love talking.
I do. Y'all know I love to talk. So I feel like it's whatever that passion that Matt has, he's just going to excel.
I like that you brought up the coaching thing. Like, dad did it. Maybe you follow in those footsteps. And I think he's one where as an athlete, if he's my coach, there's a lot to learn from him, because he's not, like I mentioned earlier, like not only has he been through like the highest of highs, but he's been through some pretty low lows as well. And just kind of, that's a pretty human thing, you know, like it's not always good. And he, you know, I think he's probably one that could speak to all the good and the bad. So that would be kind of cool, I think.
Yeah. I could see him in the broadcast booth, but with that being said, there's not a lot of opportunities to take on the high level track meets in the booth. You know, already we have a lot of voices that we already know and listen to. So it would be a question of just sort of how would that work? I personally, like, coaching takes a lot of responsibility. And if you are ready for that and want that in your life, I think you need to, like, that's the path you go. But broadcasting offers a lot of different opportunities, a lot of good ones. And if I'm looking at this, I actually think he's kind of suited for that. Mm-hmm. I could see him going into the booth and becoming sort of a voice we start to know and listen to.
Love that. So good. Any other thoughts, gang?
Any thoughts?
That guy?
No more chats.
Okay. Ashley, any other thoughts?
No, I think for once we're all taking a breather, because we're home for a week, a little bit. It's a little bit of a quieter week, and I feel like, looking ahead.
We're in this weird phase, because, like, all the kids from NCAA went to spring break. I feel like everyone was on spring break last week, so it's like everyone's chilling and going back to training, and, like, pretty soon things are going to start ramping up because of, you know, Texas relays, Florida like, the relays are about to start happening. Penn relays is
almost a month away,
and then before you know it's gonna be conference and then NCAA's trials, and then all of a sudden it's just gonna take off. So I'm enjoying this moment of
but we'll be back in action next weekend. I know I'll be going to the Stanford Invitational. You know, we're gonna have Texas relays here in Austin, which will be really cool. Again, just so many World Cross. How can we forget about World Cross next weekend? Yeah, there's so much going on, and we're still continuing to make content too. You know, you can continue to follow all of our socials, the website, you know, YouTube. I know we have some awesome workouts coming down the line as well. Some cool feature stories, you know, video features. So that's really cool too.
So stay tuned. Before I let y'all go, I want to just throw this out there. We're changing our schedule block the Flow Track podcast. It is now going to be Tuesday mornings, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern, because I know a lot of y'all tune in live with us, which we really, truly appreciate. So that's going to be the new time block moving forward. So we'll see y'all on Tuesdays now. So that does it for this week's episode. Everybody take care. Have a great week. And we'll see you next week, Tuesday.